I am currently involved with a project on Hinduism in Europe. I'm editing a two-volume handbook of Hinduism in Europe together with Ferdinando Sardella at Stockholm University. In that connection, most of the material I will be presenting is from Norway, but we can talk about a Tamil Shakta traditions in Europe, and I will explain why. Now, one feature though of this Hinduism in Europe is that this enormous diversity of traditions, that these migrants have come from many regions of India, many countries with Hindu populations, and Europeans have also converted to various traditions, and there are followers of teachings of different Hindu gurus, yoga teachers. So no single form of Hinduism is dominating in Europe, but several of the larger traditions are Vaishnava. Swami Narayan is one new, but it's present only in the UK with very few exceptions. And there are Sanatan Dharma temples organized by Hindus of North India with North Indian background are often dominated by Vaishnava divinities. And ISKCON has a presence in almost every country and is the dominating form of Hinduism in many Eastern European countries. One of the strongest Hindu traditions in many countries of Western Europe are the religious traditions of the Elam Tamils. That is the Hindu traditions of Tamils who have background from the old Tamil culture of Sri Lanka, the Jaffna Kingdom. These are different from the Indian Tamils who the British brought to Sri Lanka in the 19th century for work in plantations and who are called Hill Country Tamils or Up Country Tamils. So these Elam Tamils share destiny with the Sikhs in that they lost their political independence due to British colonialism and policies. And this political independence was not returned to them at the end of colonialism. So the Jaffna Kingdom was under the British included in an administrative unit together with the rest of the island of Sri Lanka. And with the end of colonial rule in 1948, they were included as a minority in a nation state based on this administrative unit. Both the Sikhs and the Elam Tamils have had post-colonial militant independence movement. The repression of the Tamils started soon after independence in 1948. And the situation worsened gradually, and from 1983 the war between Tamils and Sri Lankan state started. The Elam Tamils gained some independence under the LTTE rule, but were crushed in a brutal massacre in 2009. And this ended a likelihood for a Elam Tamil state. But due to these events, the Elam Tamils constitute the largest group of Hindus in a number of European countries, such as Germany, Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and they constitute a significant percentage of Hindus in Great Britain, as well as France. And the dominant religious tradition of the Elam Tamils is considered to be or theology, I would say, theological tradition is considered to be Shaiva Siddhanta, because the Brahmin priests are trained in the Shaiva Agamas, mainly in the liturgical parts of the Agamas, the Kriya sections. And the Hindu reformer Aramuga Navalar influenced this development by reviving Hinduism in the Tamil areas. So it has also some, which I will not enter into, but it influenced very much the way the Hinduism of the Elam Tamils was shaped in modern times. The Elam Tamils have eagerly established many hundred temples in Europe, And a large percentage of the total number of Hindu temples in Europe are Elam Tamil temples. Not that well known in Great Britain, because Hinduism in Great Britain has been dominated by other groups. So these Elam Tamil Hindus challenge the common identification of Hinduism with India, and also many generalizations about Hinduism in the diaspora. I noticed that Bjarne mentioned Hinduism in India and Nepal. He did not include Sri Lanka. One tendency among Indian Hindus is to present Hindu unity instead of regional and in diaspora, and is to present Hindu unity instead of regional or sectarian identities, and to promote the homogenization or even standardization of Hindu tradition based on an Indian identity. And this is very much also being supported these days by the Indian embassies, which in cooperation with Vishwa Hindu Parishad. Now, the Tamils are said to belong to the Shaiva Siddhanta theology, but Shiva plays a very minor role according to the looking at the temples, the iconography, the rituals, the main temple festivals, and the presence then of the Elam Tamil Hindus seems to offer an opportunity then of studying relationship between Shaivism and Shaktism in the temples in Europe, since there are some discrepancy between the theology and the actual temple worship. So how to identify Shakta traditions in Europe? One way is to look at the worship of Amma Durga, the Divine Mother. And among the Tamil, she is identified with the mother of Murugan and Piliyar or Vinayagar. And although the father is Shiva, Durga does not fit into this usual dualism that is applied to the Indian Hindu goddesses. So I then moved to Norway and tried to identify these traditions. And I will just mention that the first Hindu guru to settle in Europe settled in Norway, and which is unknown to most, but he settled in 1917. He first came to visit 1914. He originally came from Bengal to Great Britain, but because of the colonial policies, he felt uncomfortable staying in Britain, so he moved to Scandinavia and then became a guru in, and he spent the rest of his life there. Now, he was from Bengal, and Bengal is a goddess-dominated area, but there is actually no traces at all in his teaching about this. He was a disciple of a guru called Swami Sivanarayan Paramahamsa, who was kind of a modern type, influenced by modernity, and promoted a form of Nirguna Brahman in the form of light, and present in nature and present inside. And he was asked, do you believe in Durga, Shiva and Vishnu, or the other gods and goddesses? And he denied that, I don't believe in them. So this Ananda Acharya, who was from Bengal, we could imagine him promoting Shaktism, but actually it's absolutely absent. He wrote a number of books, but it's absolutely absent. He's not Advaita Vedanta either, but a follower of this unique Narayan Paramahamsa. So here is the samadhi of him. There is still a group. The group connected again to Bengal in the 1980s, and then they have a follower, some other Bengali traditions. But now, The worship of Hindu goddesses then in Norway started in the middle of the 1970s with the migration of Hindus from India, especially from Punjab and from the Tamil Eelam. From Punjab it was dominated by Sikhs, but the Hindus who came, especially women among them, were worshippers of Durga as their family god. Goddess. So you have two different Hindu groups, then the Hindus from North India, Punjab, Haryana, Delhi, and the Hindus from Sri Lanka, and they have totally different they have separate organizations, belong to different ritual traditions, linguistic traditions, so they have no contact. They also belong to three different nations, India and Sri Lanka, and although India, the Indian embassy claimed to represent, as India claimed to represent all of Hinduism, the Eelam Tamils do not have any embassy promoting their religion, because the embassy supports Buddhism, the Sri Lankan embassy. So for the Tamils, then the ritual performance of the Brahmin priests focuses on the murtis. That's the most important part of the temple worship. And most of the time, when they are in the temple, they constitute an audience of the ritual performance of the priests who perform the rituals, display the gods and goddesses to them, and functions as messengers between humans and gods by performing the prayers for the devotees and providing them with substances blessed by the divine, such as fire, water, and prasad. This differs quite a lot from the temples of the North Indians, where the singing of kirtan and bhajan engages the audience. For the Eelam Tamils, also the temples function as meeting places for people using the same language and having the same origin. Now they have there are around 18 Hindu temples in Norway, and most of them are organized by the Eelam Tamils. And the goddess Durga is worshipped in all of their temples, and also in the temples of the North Indian Hindus. But especially with the North Indian Hindus, each temple tries to accommodate all the worship interests of devotees, and contains statues of a large number of gods. And all the temples will then normally contain a statue of Durga, as she is the most popular goddess both in Punjab and in Tamil Eelam. And this is a process that Annette Wilke, as German researchers on the Hindu diaspora, has called the thickening of the Hindu traditions in diaspora. She uses this concept, thickening of tradition, to describe German Shaiva Tamil temples, which integrate then Shaiva Agamas, Smartas, Tantrix, Trividya, Vedanta, Shankara, vernacular folk, religiosity, devotional bhakti, and Vedic, as well as reform Hindu elements, ideology, and rituals. So this thickening means that the temple in a way becomes, try to incorporate as much of the tradition as possible to please everyone. So Durga is then usually not placed together with a husband, but she is her role as mother is emphasized. So she's placed together with Ganesh and Skanda. And there is a notable absence of Shiva. So they are this Elam, Tamil, Hindus are theologically identified as Shaivas, but in the temples, murtis of Shiva, they are certainly not important in the ritual worship in any of their temples. There are some small statues on the side, usually, and none of the temples are named after Shiva. They are all either Murugan, Vinayagar, or Amman temples. That is, they are mother and sons. The same has been noted by Annette Wilke for Germany. They are Murugan, Vinayagar, Durga temples. And in addition, some Tamil forms of the goddess Kamachi, which is the greatest temple in Germany, Naga Pushani, Adi Parashakti, Kanaga Durga, Lalita Tripurasundari, Raja Radeshwari in Germany. And the same is also the case in Switzerland. They have all the temples are venerate Ganesh, Amman, and Murugan these three as the main deities, no Shiva temple. It has been suggested then that this Tamil Shaivism is a Shaiva Shakti, or Shaiva Shakta, or even maybe Shakta Shaiva, in the sense of including the veneration of the great goddess as gods, or is this Shiva's creative power, or is she primarily the mother? Now these temples, Martin Baumann notes for Switzerland that these temples, they uses this language, commonly legitimize themselves by employing priests from the Brahmin castes, who perform the various rituals according to Brahmanic scriptures, that is the Shaiva Agamas. So I think he means legitimize here, because there is this discrepancy between the religious practice and the theological legitimization. Then this Tamil temple also include much folk religious practices. And these might also separate into different temples, which is the case in Denmark, where there is a Vinayagar Ganesh temple, which is an Orthodox Shaiva Siddhanta temple, according to Marianne Fibiger, that emphasize right ritual conduct, strict purity and orthopraxis with Brahmin priests, high caste committee members, and so on. And then the Shakti temple, Sri Abhirami Amman temple in Brande, which is founded by a lay woman who acts as a medium of Shakti. You're probably all visiting it. So, now, in these temples, the most important gods are placed in the shrines in the front. If you have been in the Tamil temples, it's rectangular, and then the most important gods and goddesses are in the front, usually three, one in the middle and one on each side. And then face the congregation that is at the, in a, and this god in the middle usually give the name to the temple. And then other gods and goddesses are worshipped in shrines placed along the walls of the temple hall. This might be Ayyappan, Mariamman, Krishna, Radha, Shiva, usually in the form of Nataraja, Rama and Sita, and the shrine of the Navagrahas. But these on the side shrines are of secondary importance in the temples, and they are always worshipped after the main gods and goddesses. And the main Abhishek is performed mainly to the central shrines, although the Arti is performed to all in the evening. The largest Hindu temple in Norway is called Siva Survamanya Alayam. It's a Murugan temple. And in the center then is the shrine of Murugan. Maybe I have... That is all the Utsavamurtis, but... The center is the shrine of Murugan, and then his two wives, Valli and Devasena. And then on his left side is Durga, and the right side, Ganesh, or Vinayakar, Pillayar. These are the Utsavamurtis, that is the procession. The procession Murtis of the temple. Now Shiva is represented in this temple only on a small side shrine together with other deities. Without the female consort. The most important annual event of this Tamil temple, or of most Tamil temples in Europe, actually, is a 12-day or 10 or 12-day procession ritual festival, usually taking place in the summer, June, July, August. And they celebrate the anniversary of the foundation of the temple. In this Murugan temple, the Utsavamurtis of Murugan and his wives, Vinayagar and Durga, are taken out in a number of processions. This is Durga being moved outside for the procession. And then the procession takes place like this, with one chariot for each Murugan, with his two wives in front, Vinayakar and Durga, being moved out in procession. So this is... This is the annual high point. Recently, the Tamil temples in Europe, they take videos of this and put it out on the web. So they are competing with a kind of a global audience for having the most beautiful processions. And this is Durga in the procession on the Tirth Utsav, that is on the following day. The weapon of Murugan, his veil, his spear, is taken for a ritual bath. This veil is often thought about as his Shakti. It was a gift from his mother. Shiva is absent in the procession, and it's Durga's role as Devi, mother, and not wife, that is celebrated, I think. So, should it be characterized as a Shaiva temple, or a Shakta temple, or a Shaiva Shakta, or a Shakta Shaiva? I don't know, but I'll ask Brianna. But the rituals are associated with Shaiva Siddhanta, which emphasize that orthodoxy, purity, and high caste, and the tradition is called Shaiva usually. The priests are trained in the Shaiva Agamas, the Kriya sections, However, if Shaiva Siddhanta is defined as a religion, religious and philosophical system in which Shiva is worshipped as the supreme deity, which it is how it is defined, then at least the material culture, the festival culture, the puja, the ritual and the material festival culture of the temple do not reflect this aspect of Shaiva Siddhanta, I think. Now, there are three Ilam Tamil temples in Oslo, and all have Durga in one of the main shrines in front of the temple. And one of them, which I will speak about now, has Durga as the main deity. So it's called Durga Amma Alayam, the temple Sri Jaya Durga Amman Kovil. So it's a Durga temple, but the organization is called Norway's Skeivt Hindu Cultural Centers. So notably the name Skeivt and not Shakta is used. Now this is the, in terms of number of members, it's the fourth largest. Siva Subramanya Alayam, which I just spoke of, is the largest temple with 2,500 members. This is a somewhat smaller. This temple is in an abandoned office building, which is an interesting example of multicultural or religious pluralism. There are different churches, temples, mosques in this building. So there are several Christian churches, Tamil Pentecostal Church, Eritrean Orthodox Church, Somali Mosque, and then the Durga Temple is up on the third floor on the left. So they seem to have it's kind of a religious. I think they kind of enforce each other. The sacredness of one religion, in a way. No one complained about not having the whole building for themselves. Now, the Durga Temple was founded in 2005, but he moved to this building in 2016. Now, this temple has the same three gods, Murugan, Durga and Vinayagar, in the front. But their positions have been switched. Durga is in the main shrine in the center, and Vinayagar and Murugan is separate shrines on her sides. The suns on her side then shows that she is worshipped as the mother. Her sons are there. Confirm her that she is the Devi, the Mahadevi, the Divine Mother, and it focuses on her independent power. It even gives some association to matrilineage, kinship system, as the father is absent. There are mothers and sons. I asked these visitors to this Devi temple why they visited this temple and not the Murugan temple, which is the largest one. And it's not that, the distance between them is not that far. And one common answer by the devotees was quite interesting, that is, the mother is more powerful than a son. So the Murugan is the son of Devi. So they would, why go to the Murugan temple when you can go to the Durga temple? Also the son has to ask mother for favors. So if you ask this Murugan, the Murugan would have to ask the mother. So why not go directly to the mother? Given the choice, if you have to ask the son, or you can ask the mother, you would of course ask the mother. This was a common answer. And no one referred to the possibility of asking a father. Even no one mentioned the father. Shiva was not mentioned by anyone. which seems he was maybe even absent in the mind of the worshippers. I noticed also during my visit to the Durgaman temple that the majority of devotees in the temple were women. My estimate is that at least 70% were women. And I asked a number of people in the temple to comment on this fact. Now, a common answer was that they usually were more women than males visiting temples, to all the Tamil temples. When I asked why, and they would explain that this is because the welfare of the family is the duty of the women, the purpose of performing the rituals were the welfare of the family, and women take greater responsibility for this. I also asked if it had anything to do with the female gender of the goddess, no men or women supported this suggestion. Was unclear to them why it would make a difference if it was a male or a female divinity, since it was the quality of the divinity that make people visit and not the gender. That she's a divinity and not a human female, and it's her divinity and not her femaleness that matters the most, apparently. Others would answer, you know, pragmatically that the temple was the closest to where they lived, and it was the most convenient to reach. I also was interested because I had the suspicion that caste or political organization could have something to do with choosing this temple, because the Murugan temple was very closely associated with LTTE, and closely associated with Vellalar, which is the dominant caste in the Tamil Elam. But none of the people, even if I pursue that line of argument, no one would... this is not things people talk about freely, and people would get uncomfortable, and it was not something I could confirm. And I think to find out those kind of things, you have to find some special informants. But based on the interviews, they simply prefer to worship the mother rather than one of her sons, because the mother is more powerful and more caring than sons, and the sons are anyway dependent on the mother. A notable feature is that all the priests in the temple are males, and all the priestly rituals are performed by them. Some of these are Brahmins, and some of them are what's called Shaiva Kurukals, that is Shaiva teachers, who are recruited most often by the Vellalars, and they are, it's not a caste, but a religious career. This is a career open for, in a way, anyone, but probably only Vellalar and high castes. But both the Brahmins and this Shaiva Kurukals have to pass through an education as priests, which results in the consecrations, and they qualify then for wearing the cord, sacred cord. And this is worn by representatives of both categories, so you can't tell from this picture who is a Brahmin and who is a Shaiva Kurukal. But one in the diaspora, it has been noted by, I think, both by Kim Knott and by Martin Baumann, that the temple has increased in importance, and this lead to male priests taking over worship of Durga in the home. That is, in a home, women would perform the rituals to a larger degree to Durga, but in the temples, males, the male priest typically becomes the authority of this worship. So there is a shift in authority then from women and mothers to men and priests in this process then, which has been termed templization. So here women in this temple, also women typically become the audience. I don't know if you can, this is here, it's maybe typical, with all the women becoming the audience of the males performing the rituals to the goddess, then, to the mother goddess. So there is, has been, the templization leads to a greater male focus on the worship of Durga, then, is the argument. So, this is the Kumbhabhishek, so it's the around 10 priests were present to perform this, but it was a very striking with the 10 male priests performing the rituals and then totally dominant female audience watching. Showing this a transfer of authority in goddess worship from males from females to males in a Hindu diaspora. The main spokespersons of the temple, though, was who are asked to explain things to visitors is a woman in this temple, though. In this temple also, there are religious practices associated with kind of folk practices in yoga. This is a person who gets possessed from Hanuman, and he travels around Europe and Sri Lanka. And then people feel that they then can bless him. They can be blessed by him. And there are also, so this he would not, I think, perform this in the Murugan temple. I assume my time is getting close to the end, so I just move to the last part, and that is the last temple. It's called the Norwegian Hindu Religious Service Center. And here you have an extraordinary constellation of murtis. The temple is named Sri Ganapati Durga Temple, and it's the smallest of the temples in Oslo. But the two main murtis here are Ganesh, Vinayagar, and Durga. And they are seated next to each other in the main shrine of the temple, as the male and female kind of divine. But in this case, not husband and wife, but mother and son. And there is a small statue of Shiva in between, but very minor. The person who started this temple, he thought that worshipping the son and mother as a divine couple could possibly be considered objectionable. So he contacted the Elam Tamil Theologians in England, who has the authority for Europe, to obtain permission, which he received. And when I interviewed him, he claimed that this was the, when it opened, it was the only Ganapati Durga temple in the world. I'm not sure, but apparently an unusual combination. But he didn't explain the presence of Shiva. But one could argue that the presence of the sun here in a way strengthens the goddess' position as mother and her powers. And at least the husband does not, a husband doesn't take power away from her. And also they are both divinities who remove obstacles. And they are also both symbols of auspiciousness. So this is the material. Of course, it raises some questions why this is called the Shaiva tradition, except for that the priests are trained in the Shaiva Agamas. It should at least be called the Shaiva Shakta tradition, perhaps. There are probably, hardly any of the Elam Tamil temples in Europe are Shiva temples. Shiva is not the main god, probably in any of them. I mean, perhaps one can be found, but usually it's Murugan, Vinayagar, and Durga. And anthropologists have noted that during and after the war in Sri Lanka, there has been an increase in Amman temples. Usually changes in religion in the Tamil areas in Sri Lanka is paralleled with changes in Tamil religion in Europe also. So there are a number of parallel developments. But looking at just the temples, the murtis, the festivals, the central gods and goddesses are Durga and her sons. And there seem to be some discrepancy between the presentation of the theology and what's going on in the actual worship. What to do with this contradiction, or maybe there isn't, but the object of worship, there is a contradiction between the object of worship and perhaps and the Shaiva theology in this case. So that's my contribution to this symposium.